Okay, so what I want to do this week, like we did last week, is talk about a topic within Pesach. But again, as usual in this spot, I want to focus on the methodological issues. So I want to talk about soft matzah. But we're going to do two things. One is go through basically using Rabbi Dr. Zivotofsky and Rabbi or Doctor. One of them has two titles, one of them has one. I know Zivotofsky has both a rabbi and a doctor before his name, and Ari Greenman is either a rabbi or a doctor. I don't remember which one. I think it's a rabbi, though. Mostly go through the main proofs from their article. They've written many over the years on the topic of soft matzah and proving that historically that's what it was, if you needed proof, we'll go through the basics of that. But then what I want to focus on a little bit at the second half, and again, even if you know these shitot, I want to focus on them methodologically, is the shitot of whether Ashkenazim can use it, because you discover in that discussion different intuitions about what it means for something to be a minhag, what it means for different communities to have traditions, whether communities can rely on them, which, you know, my tendencies, I find that more interesting than the local topic, but I find it to be a interesting sort of split point between different types of poskim. Okay, so, yes, if you needed proof that the original matzah was soft, which I assume by this point, since some of you have done research on this, you don't need proof, but we'll go through them quickly. The first is what Zivotofsky and Greenspan call the non-proof, which is the Karech non-proof, right? Because the one that everyone likes the best, that everyone knows, is actually the weakest of all of them, which is Karech, right? Everyone's like, oh, Karech, how do you wrap our matzah, if you try to wrap it? So
that was Rabbi Ginsburg. What Rabbi Ginsburg brought.
Right, that is not a proof.
That's like
it's not a
group. No, but that's what
right?
he did the other night with Big Toast on the toast.
Yeah. Right, so it's not a proof at all. Why is it not a proof?
You can wrap cracker also.
Not really.
So you could say that, what? Right? So you could just say that it means sandwich, right? So there are two reasons that it might not be, right? I could read you the first one. Well, let's read the first line, right? Korech is what we call, right? Amru alav al hilal shahaya korchon bevar achlan ve'ochlan shenemar matzot merum yochlu. Right? This is based, we get the word from Hillel, who wrapped, here's more sources, who wrapped matzah and maror together.
Yeah.
And that was how he read matzah and merum yochlu. And as we know, that's what we do. Zecher lemikdash kehillel, we do that. Fine.
Right.
Now, there are...
Zecher
good. Now, there are two reasons that they point out why this doesn't prove that matzah was soft. One is what Ellie said, which is that korech can mean to surround rather than wrap, right? Like a krach is not a wrapped city, it is a surrounded city.
That's true.
Right, it's surrounded by a hard wall.
I mean, well, there was a
right?
The city is wrapped by.
But there is a better disproof, which is the position of Rabbi Hanan. Not a disproof, a negation of proof. It's not wrong. Meaning, put it this way: once we prove that matzah is soft, it will turn out that it's very likely that they made a shawarma. Right, but if that was the only source we had, that wouldn't be a good raya, because if you look at number three, Rabbi Hanan writes she'korech hamaror al hamatzah, right? That it wasn't the maror on the outside. It wasn't the matzah on the outside. It was the maror on the outside.
Was that
now
source? Oh,
number three, Rabbi Hanan, right? Now, if that's the case, so all that proves is that maror was wrappable, which, as Ephraim knows, of course it was wrappable. It was lettuce. It wasn't horseradish, right? But that's a different shear, which
that's good.
It's what?
That's good.
You didn't even know that, Rabbi Hanan. But yes, Rabbi Hanan said obviously. So parenthetically, right? Either Korech proves that matzah was soft, or proves maror is soft. Either way, it disavows some people of their notion of what we're doing on Seder night, which is okay. I'm, you know,
sweet.
I did this last week also, as I was much freer than I was when I came to Toronto. So I'm being a little bit more...
How do you translate that?
See whether I put this recording anywhere.
We're all on the side that it's not soft back then.
Shall we call it a morer al matzah? How do you translate that?
Then it's okay.
He wrapped the morer around the matzah.
Around the matzah.
Yeah.
I like
smorer. Right, meaning it's the matzah on the inside, the morer on the outside. Right, this was... Lidugma, basically the machloket between... Right, Rabbi Hananel imagines morer, as korech, as sushi. right? Really the green on the outside and the grain on the inside, right? As opposed, sorry, not like, you know, you can do sushi both ways, rice on the outside, seaweed on the inside, seaweed on the outside. So think about it the same way, okay?
No mer.
So Rabbeinu Chananel says you wrap the maror over the matzah.
No, I think
that's besiv. Okay. Did I run out of these and I printed out Rebbe Shabbat? You want me to print more?
I don't think I need more.
Okay, fine. So if you look, I gave you sort of throughout, I went through pieces from the Zivotofsky Greenspan article. Again, they have multiple versions of it. This is the one that was in Chakira. And they write, so this is what I just said outside. While the root korech is often used to mean wrap, it can also have the meaning to surround. For example, a walled city is called a krach because it's surrounded by a wall. And a hard binding surrounding around a book is called a kricha, right, in modern Hebrew, right? The wrap, right? Thus, korech could involve surrounding a maror with hard matzah, like a sandwich, just as the city is surrounded by a wall. Now, God, this section of korech offers no proof one way or the other
it's
as to the kind of matzah used.
A surrounding... The krach is a complete surrounding of the city. A sandwich is not a complete surrounding.
Okay, but not necessarily that it means complete, right? You could have, right? And besides, if you take Rabbeinu Chananel, again, that's part of their article, I just didn't put everything in the article. Rabbeinu Chananel wraps them up. Fine. It's not bad. It's just not a proof. That's the only point, right? There are a lot of other things that really are proofs, so we'll go through them very quickly. Next proof is the mold proof, right? The mold proof. From the Gemara in Pesachim Dav Zayin, but I gave you the summary in Shulchan Aruch in number 5, which is Matzah Pas BePesach BeVeisav Einu Demu Chametz Matzah. Right, so there's two proofs in this. One is this is the mold proof plus the I don't know the difference between matzah and maror proof. Right, so proof matzah and chametz proof. Right, one proof is what do you mean you don't know the difference between matzah and chametz? I'll tell you, matzah is inedible cracker, right? And
what? I love matzah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's really a great cracker.
No, I just sometimes like it. It's different than bread. It's different.
You would never think matzah has chametz.
Right?
No, no,
and the second is mutar afilu b'achila dazlan basar basra. Fine.
Upash harbe. Back then, all of the bread.
So then you can go by rove in this case, right? Because you assume that it's matzah. Right? I mean, you find something, you know, on your table in Pesach, you can assume that it's matzah, because you didn't have maror there. You didn't have chametz there, rather. Right? You can assume that it is. That's first halacha. Vim hu me'upa sharbe, and if it's really, really rotted, she'yev sholis apesh kol kach minizach ha-pesach, right? Then it could not possibly have been that rotted since the beginning of Pesach, as vadayu chametz. Then it's chametz. The problem is, right? But if you left it enough days that that mold could have grown during Pesach, so then, so if we bake every day, so it's fine. Because then we can say, oh, we kept baking hot matzah and we kept putting it on top, so the ones at the bottom were constantly warm, which helps mold grow. Right? So proof number two is, have you ever seen, literally, I remember I went into Toronto last year, I went to one of the bookstores, and they're selling year-old matzah at half price. Sure. And it looks and tastes the exact same. One of the bookstores. That's, they mamish, right, it can go for so long, it doesn't get moldy in 7 days. It doesn't get moldy in a year.
Yeah.
Right, that thing stays forever. It is pre-stale, you know, like pre-shrunken clothes, right? It is pre-staled bread, right? Of course you do.
That's pretty solid.
Oh yeah, no. They were like the first proof they don't love, they don't not love. Second one, like proof number one for them is it can get moldy in 7 days. That is a thing,
if it's
right?
Yeah.
Matzah can get moldy, which proves it's more like a pita, because pitas, you ever try, get moldy very quick.
Yeah, really.
Right, like, and especially thin ones, like mamish.
In the bag, it takes about 3 days.
Yeah, 2-3 days. That makes total sense. That's why you buy pita in the store in Israel. What do they all say?
Eat them in 3 days.
What?
Eat them now.
No.
Freeze them.
Freeze them. That's right. They all say on it, right? Because you buy them in these, right? I buy 25 at a time, right? I buy this massive thing of pita, 25 at a time. They say, freeze it, right? Because it's cheap as anything, right? People, right? 25 pita out in this country is like 14 shekel, right?
Why is
the
flour 60?
Wait. It is so much more. They're edible. They have moisture. I don't know.
Moisture, I think. Moisture is going to be the quickest mold.
Okay. Now, the next proof is what's called the size proof. Right? which is how thick and how big is your matzah? So, sorry, not thickness yet. Size. Right. Size proof. We'll get to thickness. The size proof.
It can't be that hard if it's too thick.
What?
It can't be so hard.
But no, not thick yet. Size. Sheer size. So the Torah writes from the Rosh. Adoni Avi Rosh Zal, the Kasav. The Noagin Ba'ashkaraz Bit Sarfas, Lasos Mi Isaron. Zechar Lach Me Toda, Shayotse Mi Vez Yisrael Mevi Toda. They used to make it out of in Isaron. Okay? Hold that thought. They used to make matzah out of an Isaron because that was how much they used in the Lach Me Toda, and because you bring a toda when you leave jail, and we left the jail of Egypt. So Zecher, to leaving Egypt, they made it from an Isaron as a symbol. Okay?
That's
fine.
Okay.
And the Mishnah Berurah writes, okay, that's not the minhag nowadays. Why is that a problem? So look at number 8. They said, well, how big is an Isaron? So they said, even using the smallest opinion of the size of an Isaron would mean that a thin matzah made from a third of an Isaron would be a matzah for the record books, many, many feet in diameter.
No, that's impossible. It's
something not that's how much flour it is. Something not realistic, as it would not fit in an oven. This custom indicates that their matzah had to be significantly thicker than any modern matzah. While this proves that they used thick matzah in the past, it does not definitively prove that they used soft matzos, right? So far, just thick. Right, we'll get to in a minute. There are individuals today who make three hard, thick matzahs from one Isaron.
Like rocks.
Yeah, yes, that we'll get there. We're getting there. Don't worry, we're getting there. Furthermore, the lechem aponim in the Beis Hamikdash were made from two Isarons were allowed to be up a tevach thick or matzah. And according to lechem aponim expert Professor Zohar Amar, they're most likely not soft and pliable, rather thick, edible crackers. So he said it's actually possible. Right, you could actually make it in some sort of in between state. So they said, okay, that it's hard. It's not hard. That doesn't prove it's soft. Right? Meaning, you can theoretically make something in between, which is more like a... I don't know exactly what the consistency is, but somewhere between our hard, our rock hard stuff and fluffy pita.
All right, wait, what's an Isaron?
The amount is not clear, and that's what they said. The smallest amount.
It's a measurement.
Like, it's a measurement. Yeah, it's a measurement. It's a measurement. Yeah,
biscotti, biscotti.
Okay.
The blocks are a good example.
It'd be like biscotti.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, good.
That's kind of gross for lechem aponim.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay. Now, we'll get to thickness in a moment. The next proof that they bring is what they call the pillow proof. What's the pillow proof? The pillow proof is that the Berhetiv quotes the Marashal that... Yeah, the Amshar Shlomo, that you should hide your afikomen or put your afikomen under your pillow until it's ready to eat. I love this proof. And they're like, have you seen what happens if you sit on hard matzah? Right? That is a bad idea. Right? Soft matzah, yesh latun, right? It's a pita. You could do that. You could hide in your pillow. Right? You do not want to put hard matzah in your pillow. It's a terrible, terrible idea. That's what they call the pillow proof. Then they do the thickness proof.
Why do they name these?
What?
Is anyone like...
It's a long article. That's why. It's each section. Okay. Right? It's an article. I'm just going section by section. Okay? The next one is the... is and they're also funny writers. Like, they're very comical. They're good people. Like, you know, they're the Halakhic Adventures website people. Right? Okay. Thickness.
I don't know what that is.
It's a website called Halachic Adventures where you can go and you can find all the Halachic Adventures. This is what they do for fun, right? They're
go on Halachic.
Yes, they go on Halachic. That's exactly what they do.
And they go shringing bad shuvas late at night.
Okay, so then the next one is the thickness proof. Okay, good. So the Rama says, so the Shulchan Aruch says, "Einot sin srikin amutzuyarn liyotzar b'paskim min chayva of kol mazon mazon mazik dol shid pachiv kol mazon mazon matzos mutar mikol mtov lizar la'atzoshen lo ashes behem." Right, we make holes in them, etc. V'yesh Rama writes, "V'yesh lasos hamatzos rikiken." You should make it thick. V'lo pas ava kishar lechem. Don't make it as thick as other bread. Kina rikiken memarin lahachmetz.
Not as thick as other bread.
Correct. Now the Rama writes, if you go to 11, they write, however, the lack of specific thickness in the Rama's statement might lead one to believe the Rama is advocating paper-thin, cracker-like matzos similar to what is used today. But that's not the case, because the Berhetev cites the Beis Hillel that the custom was to make matzah thinner than normal bread and to make them in etzba thick, right? The Prima Gadim says an etzba is the width of a thumb, and that this was for the matzah that was ground to make matzah meal. Apparently, his matzah was hard, and thus the finger-thick matzah could not realistically be eaten, so he assumes that such thick matzah was ground, implying that there was thinner matzah that was made to be eaten. And it will, as will be seen, having more than one style of matzah was not uncommon. Right. So now they start introducing what they think is part of the confusion, is that, right, the way the poskim understand the Rama is that they would make their matzah about right, up to an etzbafik, which is try biting that thing, right? So the Prima Gondim says, oh, that's matzah meal matzah, right? They would make hard, thick matzah, which they would then grind. But what's the assumption of the Prima Gondim?
No one would eat this.
Matzah hard, as thick as you're allowed to make matzah, is not a physical impossibility to eat, right? Now, on the other hand, an etzba thick soft bread
is impossible.
Totally reasonable, right? I mean, how many etzba thick was the bread you just made?
Oh,
right?
At least three.
You made bread? Yeah, he made bread.
Everyone's like, whoa, he made bread. Yeah, and when you slide it, an etzba is basically, and to be fair, an etzba thick is about a thick slice of bread.
This way.
No, no.
Yeah, he was going like this.
No. An etzba. No, an etzba.
How thick the bread is.
Yeah. It's like 2-3 centimeters, yeah. It's like a slice of bread, maybe a thick slice of bread. It's like a challah slice. It's a challah slice, that's what it is.
That's a nice slice.
Right? That's what it is, right? That's about the thickness.
But for a flatbread, it's a very thick flatbread.
It's a thick flatbread. It's not like unheard of. It's like
it's a thick pizza, a thick laffa.
A thick pizza, laffa. It's more like a, what's it called? It's more like a what are they called?
I said it's a nice thick pizza.
Like it's like a focaccia, right? That's what it is. A focaccia, basically. Like that thick thickness or pizza. It's like pizza. That's what it is. Okay.
Like
fine.
Pizza, not New York pizza.
Then the great proof.
So not Detroit
pizza. The freshness proof. Mm. Right? What's the freshness proof?
Not Detroit pizza.
The freshness proof. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, okay. The Yosher near Lithuania's Daiti Mishum Dizeya Duash Bismana Kadman Lohia Ofen Kolomatsus Kodom Pesach, Ela Ofen Bichol Yomi Mea Pesach Pas Layom Ze. The Minog, Ludore Doros, was to bake matzah fresh every day. Such that the tour had to write that there were these outliers in Barcelona who would bake it before Pesach. What was the svara to bake before Pesach? Why isn't it bittel? Right, because on Pesach chametz is not batel afil be'elef. Right? Meaning it's never batel, but before Pesach it is. Right? So they would make their matzah before.
That's why you buy milk before, right?
That's why there are people who buy milk before. I don't buy milk before. There are people who buy milk before. Right? That's why, yes, that is why at Hayom, the many Chabad have the minhag that they only drink bottled water that they had before Pesach. And they fill up their houses with these bottles of water, right?
Yishmak mir.
I have a cousin who does this. He mamish fills up his house with like bottles and bottles and bottles, and they cook with it because they won't, right? Just anything, right? Bathroom, I think they don't, like toilets, they'll use like that water, but like cooking. Right, but the svara is the same, right?
Why will they use toilet water?
Because they're.
Hanah.
No, I got Hanah. I mean, it's not Hanah, they're Chachila. It's not Hanah, they're Chachila.
So?
Right?
I'm not like use chametz.
And it's less chamor, anyways, right? So it's only for the whatever it is. The point is that the Torah writes that the normal minhag was to bake every day, such that the minhag in Barcelona was an outlier, right?
Rabbi, I'm very confused about this whole freshness thing.
One second, we're not done.
I'm sorry. About the idea that it's batel if you make it before Pesach.
That if there was a little bit of chametz, one in a thousand, then it would be batel before Pesach.
Oh, you're saying like when you do bittel chametz?
No, bittel chametz. Like batel, like when if milk mixes into meat, 1/60th, right? So it's batel. So chametz on Pesach is not like that. It's never batel.
Meaning if something accidentally falls in.
Correct. So they're saying if a little tiny little bit of chametz fell in before Pesach, it would be batel. But if it happened on Pesach, it wouldn't be. It is batel. I think it's shishim before Pesach. And it's still had there. Not everything is. Truma is not, but yeah, I think it's shishim. I have to look back, but I think it's shishim. Okay. So that's sheish. That's different. Fine. And then he says, Vizel kiminag shalanu. Stambian, I'm not Yainesach. Stambian, I knew what you meant. Vizel kiminag, unless you actually meant Yainesach.
No, I meant Stambian.
Yeah. So he says, Vizel kiminag shalanu. And he says, this is our minag. To bake it before, because of Ledvar Chiddush. But the Tor says there was a Chiddush in his time, but now it's flipped. Right? V'lachen k'shayofen b'chol yom lechol paschamam, ken loma yigra matzas mitzvah shalo yofo so samach la'achila, v'aynu achar chatzos. Now in the time of the Tor, because they always baked fresh, they did the same for matzas mitzvah. Right? They would do it after chatzos, Erev Pesach, because that's what you need to be doing. Right? You need more things to be doing on Erev Pesach, so they would bake their matzah. Ad hayom, people do this.
I think yes.
right? And they said, why would they do it on Erev Pesach? Because fresh bread, warm bread is nicer. I have tasted matzah right out of the oven.
It's better.
Is it?
Barely. Mm-hmm. And an hour later? 3 hours later? Matzah? 3 hours later?
It's when it's fresh, when you put it in the oven.
3 hours later once it's cooled down. They made it chatzos.
It's just like a little bit like nicer and crispier. I don't know.
What?
No, it's really not.
Crispier, you want You're
No, it's not. That's the thing.
No,
is this whole discussion of.
It's like after 6 hours.
It's nothing.
Right? No, you put it in the oven.
They did it in chatzos, Erev Pesach. Right? No. Right? The Aruch HaShulchan says, what was the reason for this minhag? They wanted fresh matzah. What are you talking about? It literally tastes no different. I have no idea. Right? If the matzah was cooked a day ago, a month ago, a year ago. No clue. Right? So Haraya used to be soft. Okay. Now, what happened? So why is there confusion in Poskim? Right? Why do people read the sources and say, oh, hard matzah? Because what they argue is that you find evidence already in the Gonim that they made more than one type of matzah. Matzah just means something that hasn't risen. So, they just like now, right? We have, think about it, we have pitot, and we have bread, and we have melba toast, right? We have hard and soft. All these things are pachot yoter, the same thing, right? They're just different softness, thickness, etc. They did the same for matzah. They had the matzah they ate. They had that which they ground into breadcrumbs, essentially, right? Matzah crumbs, right? Matzah meal, what we call it, right? They also had the special matzah. What was the special matzah? The special matzah was Erev matzah, and that's the first one we get. That when did they start making hard matzah? Yes. Erev matzah, correct. And that's where you get it, because the minhag in the time of Yehudaigon, quoted by Lachos Ktsuvos, is that in the 8th century, they made matzah to be the Erev for the entire year, and they wouldn't switch it.
Right?
Now, this is what we do on Hayom. We put a box of matzah to be the Erev. And literally, you're allowed to, if you don't have bread one Shabbos, you don't have challah one Shabbos, you are halachically allowed to walk over and take bread, because it belongs to everybody. It belongs to the tzibur.
Where is
right?
It?
What?
Where is it?
In the shul, in the rabbi's house. Right? Because the whole deal, if you're allowed to put it on the shul, because the shul isn't a bayit. So some people say, you can, because you could live in it. Other people say you put it in the rabbi's house. Whatever it is. You put it somewhere. Right? But I know cases in the Heights. People forgot matzah. Roy Schwartz said, oh, there's a box of matzah waiting for you. Right? So you can have your 8-month-old matzah. Enjoy. And guess what?
You ate it all over Shabbos. So
we just go take it.
Still calls it.
Yeah, theoretically.
Yeah, because you go by the beginning of Shabbos.
Take with me?
What?
You guys want to come to
go ahead. But guess what? It tastes the same. Right?
No,
it tastes the same. It's fine. That's why people bother doing it. Right? So, in the 8th century, so the Yehudaigon, now, by the way, when did they make the matzah? The Erev, what day would they make it? Erev Pesach. What do you think? Right? They made matzah and then they put it there for a year. Right? That was where Yehudaigon said the minhag was.
Wait, why don't you keep it for more than a year?
What?
Why did they have to renew it?
Oh, they did. There were the other places that the minhag was to leave it for 2-3 years.
Uh-huh.
In a chanami.
Right.
Okay, fine.
Squirrels.
Now, in the halacha ketubah, I'm reading this outside, but you can read it. In the halacha ketubah, he doesn't call it matzah. How do we know it was matzah?
Because they had it over Pesach.
Yes, because he says they put the ear of Erev Pesach. It had to be matzah. Right? That is just...
It's not a riot, because
it's not a riot.
They called it matzah.
It's not chametz. It's halachically matzah.
That was bread. That was also bread.
Halachically.
I understand.
Halachically.
I don't think it's a riot to say anything.
It's a riot on the fact that it was matzah.
Not that it was halachically matzah.
It was matzah.
Yeah. He said they didn't call it matzah, but we know that they were capable of making hard, lasting substances, which from a halachic perspective are non-chametz wheat substances, which we call matzah, in other words. Right? Right?
Okay.
That's all we know so far. In the halachic tshuva. Okay?
No one's attacking this off.
Later on, in the 15th century, in the Leket Yosher, they call it, they have the same minhag, but they call it matzah. Right? Now, the minhag there was that they would hang it, they would, I don't know why they did it this way, but the minhag in Austria was they put a hole in the middle and they hung it in the house of the Trumas Hadeshen. Right? It was like the decoration on his house for the winter. Okay, fine.
Hard matzah.
Now, it apparently once happened that it broke.
Hang a piece of hard matzah.
You make a hole and you hang. You can make a hole in it.
A hole in the beginning when you cook it.
Yeah, before you
cook whatever.
Well, you put a string through it. It's not hard to hang it.
It's pretty hard.
Yeah, make it like a.
No, it's so easy.
What, like a, have you never had like a. Like a pretzel. Yeah, a pretzel. A big pretzel. I don't know.
Are you all crazy? Why is this hard?
I don't know why this is so complicated. Right?
That's the matzo we're
They didn't just like break a hole. They made it with a hole. They made it like a matzo bagel. I don't know.
You can't even break
fine.
A hole.
Shine.
You could break a hole.
And they said once it got moldy and broke. Once. Right? So they made a new one and it lasted until the next Pesach. Right? Meaning nadir that it ever became. Fine. The Marivayel also says that it was called matzah, though he had it in the house and not in the shul. Right? This is the Machlokes shul house. Fine. Which means that in Austria and Germany in the 15th century, they were making matzah that was theoretically fresh the whole year, and it was rare that it became moldy.
We don't know this is the Pesach matzah, though. We don't know this is what they use for the matzah mitzvah.
No, but we know, again, okay. They're not saying that. They say, no, this is exactly their point. No, that's his point. They're not making it.
Oh, but I saw him.
No, he's not matzah mitzvah.
This guy, he says standard matzah was dry enough to theoretically rain. I don't know if it was standard.
Oh, not necessarily, but it was standard enough that they called it matzah at that point, right? Going back to, right, you could quibble, right? They think it's standard matzah, you could quibble and say it was standard enough that people called it matzah already, which means that people had it, which, by the way, that doesn't prove they use it for matzah's mitzvah, meaning that would be like saying, oh, the fact that we have crackers proves that we never have soft bread. Like, they could have had hard and soft. That didn't prove anything, right? That proves nothing, right? It means they called it matzah, like the same way melba toast is hamotzi,
right?
Because it's baked as bread and just overbaked until it's hard, right? Just bread. Right? It's bread which is dried out afterwards, right? Not all. Right? The frumi brands are not, because they know that if they did that, it would be hamotzi. So they make it meikara. But the non-frumi brands, the OU says on their website, are hamotzi, because they were made as bread and then dried out and, you know.
Melba toast.
But I'm saying the same svara, the same svara was true of matzah. Okay? Now, they do note that the very interesting thing, and this is for Ephraim, right? Was that apparently, and this is what throws everything a bit off, is that Rav Kafach testifies that in Teiman, they also used matzah for an entire year.
One second.
And now this is a bit weird, because he said, wait a second, how could it be that it's a whole year? In Teiman, they always use soft matzah. That we know.
Why can't they have also made hard matzah?
But we know, so Rav Kafach said they didn't. Right, that's not what was going on, right? So they said, so how did that happen? So they said, well, they experimented. And they said, let's try the difference between the weather in the Middle East and the weather in Austria and Germany. In Austria and Germany, what happens if you hang a matzah outside?
It'll become moldy,
even the hard one, because it'll get wet. But if you hang a matzah in the Middle East, where it doesn't rain for 6 months, and it's not hot, what would happen if you hang a pita? So they said, they hung a pita.
It'll dry out.
It dried out, but never came moldy. They said it left there for months. Wow. Right? They experimented, right? And then they said, they took it down, and it turns out that if you dip it, it can be, right? Sorry, either it can be eaten as a dried cracker, and if you dip it, it becomes soft again. Who knew? Okay, fine. But it's clear that in Germany, they were using hard ones. That's what they're talking about. Now, they note in number 14 that by the mid-18th century, it's clear that Ashkenazim had thick and thin. The thick they called, where's Donnie? He's not here. They called ribeisen, right? Ribeisen was hand grater matzah, right? And then they had soft matzah, right? And then the Adnei Paz starts noting that unfortunately new bakers have started making the thin matzah first and bake the thick ones. The oven has already begun to cool, right? Which is a problem, right? You want the thicker matzah to be when it's hotter. But the point is they're clearly making different types of matzah, right? Thick, grindable matzah, and then something else, which is, you know, probably soft. And then, in 15, they say that basically, they throw in another few proofs. So, for example, taking matzah off the wall was considered Rediyas Hapas, just like
bread.
Now, if you know anything about how you make pitot and lafas, yeah, you put them on the side of the tanur, right? You don't do that with matzah. It's not going to work. It doesn't stick anywhere, right? Like, in, ever. Out, ever. It does nothing, right? And he said, okay, so where did it happen that we got to this matzah? So he said, basically, their theory is, the Ramah writes that the minhag was to make it ever thinner. Right? And that doesn't mean they made it hard. It just means they made it ever thinner. When did it probably become that all matzah became... Now, why did they make... Right? And harder, not hard. He said, why did people do this? They think that the first round, moving to hard matzah, was just a function of the chumrah of the Chachmei Barcelona. Right? That they wanted to bake everything before Pesach. If you combine the chumrah of the Chachmei Barcelona with the chumrah of the Ramah to make it ever thinner, what do you get?
Hard
matzah, right? Or harder matzah, because it's thinner and it's supposed to last for a week, right? Because you want to bake it before, which leads you to soft matzah. Now they claim, right, that this didn't end. They write in the next paragraph that the march towards ever drier and thinner matzah continued unabated. But their argument is that when it really changed was when people had urban centers and started having to bake matzah en masse, right? And then it really culminated with Manischewitz, essentially, right? With being centralized into machines, right? The more they had urbanization and the more they had to store it and the more they had to export it, the harder it became, the thinner it became, the more storable it became.
Because it doesn't last.
Because it lasts longer, right? It lasts for all of eternity, right? It just lasts forever. Right, and the last paragraph they write, rather it seems that the final stage in the evolution of the cracker thin matzah was because of another halachic kurma, the concern that the thick matzah is more difficult to prevent and to ascertain chimutz. As seen above, the Ashkenazi communities in the 17th and 19th centuries were concerned about thick matzah becoming chametz. They made a concerted effort to produce thinner and thinner matzah from drier and drier batter. This became easier to do thanks to powered machines that could knead very dry batter. But the process took time, and for centuries, probably the 17th through the 19th, there were two types of matzah being made, thick to be grated into matzah meal and thin to be eaten.
Well, thick doesn't necessarily mean not soft.
Thick to be ground into matzah meal? Yes, it does. They called it ribeisen, that which you grind into matzah meal.
No, I'm saying if you make...
No. He's saying in Ashkenaz, they called the thick one ribeisen, which was that which you grate. That's clearly hard. That's hard.
I'm saying,
you could have thick soft.
No, I'm saying the Ramah.
No, he's just saying descriptively. He's saying in Ashkenaz, they were making, not they had. They thought halakhic you had to. They were making thick, roundable matzah.
Reading the Ramah,
and
though.
Thin matzah. No. This is at this point historical, yeah. Right? And then they said that super hard, thin matzah, such as used today, can simply not be rubbed against a grater in the way potato is ground, right? Meaning it's clear that not only was it hard, but it wasn't hard like ours. It wasn't thin. Mm-hmm. It was thin, soft, and thick, hard, right? Right. Our matzah can't be grated either. Try doing that, right? Right. Meaning it won't work, right? Neither will work. And he said this happened, and then he said the historical process seemed to have occurred in both Ashkenazic and Sephardic lands, with a single significant exception being Yemen, where soft matzah continued to be baked daily, and the Yemenite Jews continue this until today. The development of the modern thin hard matzah thus seems to have been driven solely by halachic concerns rather than sociological or practical needs. Right, that's their conclusion. Okay, I basically buy this conclusion. Like I said, what I want to focus on for the second half hour here is, okay, now let's take a halachic process issue here, okay? Let's assume this is right. But Ashkenazi communities, for however long, we don't know, right? Take their arguments, whatever. For as far as any of us remember, Ashkenazi communities have been using
hard
matzah. And the only people who used soft matzah were Temanim.
Yes.
What does that do to the halachic process? So now let's talk about this meta. So give me, give me three models.
Asher,
Yaakov, give me three models. What could Poskim do? Ashkenazi Poskim.
Ashkenazi Poskim, they could say sur.
Why?
Because it's bringing the minhag
Ashkenazi. Good. So one possibility is for someone to be. You can keep walking. I'm not like it's just that we've been talking this a lot. What? Okay. So wait till I lay it out. Okay. Right, one possibility methodologically is to say, look, we really, really believe in this notion of Ashkenaz Svard, right?
And
methodological is and Temani or whatever. Methodological assumption one. Two is the fact that lo ra'inu raya, right? That essentially, since we haven't seen that we have soft matzah, that must mean we don't do it,
mm-hmm.
Right? Like, the lack of a minhag is evidence that we right? To be very into this notion of we need like an active misora rather than just like we didn't do it, right? That would be the position that would say Ashkenazim can't do it, right? It requires two main assumptions. One is a hard belief in the notion of a dot, and two, right, is the notion that not only do we accept a dot, but non-minhag, right? I mean, the lack of a minhag is itself evidence of a shita, and we are not allowed to rely on, like, the misort of other communities, but, right?
If I can call this a smatzah, if I just said I'm making Pesach pastries...
So you'd say you have no misora, right? You have no misora.
We don't demand a misora to someone
making... like I said, methodologically, right? This would be the hard line position, right? Yeah. That's model one. Model two, at the other extreme, is...
Mutter
for one of two things. No. One of two reasons. One of two reasons.
Or either minhagim don't matter, or because they don't have to.
Either there isn't... No, not that minhagim don't matter, right? This is not a minhagim don't matter.
Yeah.
There isn't a hard line between Ashkenaz and Svard, and therefore, the fact that other communities have the minhag is enough for us, right? Possibility two, and you could believe both of these, but each of these would be independently sufficient. The other is to say, no, in general, I really do believe in Ashkenaz, Svar, Taman, etc., but this is not a minhag. This is just like a reality, right? We use hard matzah. It's not a minhag.
That's what I
read. Right? Meaning, those are two methodological assumptions.
We use soft matzah. It's just a reality that we...
No. Is it we do? Yeah, we didn't.
Oh.
Right? Meaning we didn't. Yeah. Right? Meaning, there's two ways of saying it's mutter. One is to say we can borrow Misoris cross communities because we don't believe in a hard split, or to say even if in general we can't, here we can, because there is no Ashkenazi minhag not to have soft matzah. We just haven't.
But isn't that what makes a minhag?
Wait, what about option three?
No. No.
Also true, you could say
minhag toast. What? Or minhag toast, whatever. There's different ways of going. But, no, you don't have to say it's a minhag toast. You could say it's not a minhag. Why are you saying it's a minhag toast? You can just assume there is no such minhag. Just because we do something doesn't make it a minhag. Right?
Actually speaking, if I
want soft
matzah, it's a minhag and something we do.
What do you mean? Because you could say, that Ashkenazim have hard matzah the way people, like 75-year-olds from Europe, still like herring. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's what Ashkenazim do. Like that's what they did. That's what they knew. It's not a minhag, right? A minhag requires that we did this out of custom, not we did it, right? That's not a minhag, right? That's like saying, right? You know, that's like saying that. I don't know.
Wearing the Pumas hat is a minhag.
Yeah, whatever. Like what?
All things that we did out of custom were done at some point because we did it.
But you can just say, look, it's not a custom. It's just. Not every custom rises to the status of a binding minhag, especially a negative minhag, right? A negative thing, right? Like, who said we didn't? We just, right? Like, look, I'll give you a very good reason. Why does everyone have soft matzah? Because in America, matzah is a loss leader,
right?
And they give it away, right? They give away the hard stuff, right? The soft stuff is a fortune, right? So people get their 5 pounds.
I mean, the hard stuff is expensive.
If you get shmura, right? Hand shmura.
Yeah.
But if people just use the boxes, you know, you get 5 pounds for free at ShopRite. Like, whatever. Or whatever. I don't know. Come up with whatever you want. What's the middle? Think like a posek. Don't think like a lamdan. Right? A lamdan has two possibilities here. What is a posek?
Chathilo, you should use hard.
Good. Right? Which is, well, I sort of hear this, I sort of hear that, you know, I'm not convinced, you know, if...
Why would Posek think that?
Because post-game, because unlike Lamdanim...
Guys, you figured out...
Soft mats and be the other people using hard mats, okay, it's fine.
What do you mean?
No,
who cares?
Meaning, Posek could think and say, look, I am sympathetic to both sides, so what I'll say is, look... I'm not saying it's usher. I'm just saying, like, all things being equal, I wouldn't do it. If you do it, fine.
I'll take
I mean, that's a classic psak thing, right? Again, those are the three models. Theoretical, guys.
Yeah,
whoa.
No, what about?
We know, Ephraim. We know. We don't like it either.
You know, it's just not rational.
No, it is.
Number one into
what do you mean? No, that's not true. It's perfectly rational. It's a pragmatic solution. It's not a conceptual one. Pragmatic. It's a very pragmatic one, and it's a very Ashkenazi thing to say.
Yeah,
which is, this is sort of right, make right, da-da-da, blah, 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 right? This is like, right? Those are the three models, okay? Again, I want to think about it meta for a moment. Just right, what you could say. Now, not surprisingly, as is often the case in Psak, everything you could say, someone did. Right? So, who said the hardline model? So,
RCV.
First I'll give you a big name, and then I'll give you a less big name. Big name, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach.
Oh.
Right? In number 17 in Halachot Shlomo, he says... right? Turn to 17 for a moment. He says...
It's the next page.
It's the next page, yeah. He said, theoretically, right? He's not arguing Mikra Din, right? Like, halachically. But he says, look, this is a very classic Ashkenazi line. Mikomakom lemaisa yesh la'asosan rikikin dakin. Lemaisa, you should make them hard and thin. V'haminog... Sorry, first point. Mikra, then you can make them soft and thick. The minog, the maisa, you're supposed to make them thin. That's the Ramah. The minog bein Ashkenazim la'sosa dak kol efshar. The ein la'ashkenazi la'hake lechom matzah ava yosem eragil. You should not have thicker matzah. Umishakasha lo achilas matzah kazu b'chidil kwezachuch la'hatpil matzah l'rega katan m'mayim u'letzen miyad. He said, what if someone's sick? So you have two options. Have soft matzah, or have hard matzah, which you soaked in water. And he says, I'd rather you soak the soft matzah. Now that's a relatively hard line. The hard matzah, rather. That's a relatively hard line. Right? Now, if you want to see... Right, this came to the fore a few years ago. So now look at 16 in the RCV, the Rabbinical Council of Victoria. That's Australia, people.
Australia.
Yes, in Australia.
Cities in Australia.
Canada. Yeah. Or,
Victoria is a city in Australia?
I think. Wait, Victoria is in Australia?
Sydney.
I'm pretty sure that is. Okay, anyways. So, and yes, Rabbi Yashiv holds this as well, but we'll see it in theirs. Right? They brought the question to Rabbi Yashiv, and this is what they write. It has been brought to the attention of the Rabbinical Council of Victoria that despite it having expressed grave concerns over the availability of soft lofta-style matzah before Pesach last year, this product has once again become available to the public for purchase and consumption. No. The RCV therefore wishes to reiterate its stance on this matter. And following consultation with local kosher experts, strongly recommend against the consumption of ownership of these matzahs during Pesach. You want to do it before Pesach, isn't the hate. All member rabbis of the RCV have been appraised of this of the halachic issues involved. Should consumers seek further information, we urge them to consult their rav or kosher authority as a matter of priority. Additionally, please be advised that the supplier of these matzahs has stated on his website, the Rabbi Yosef Shalmel Yashiv Shlita, leading halachic authority in Israel, inspected these matzahs and stated that the matzahs of this nation would be perfectly kosher for Pesach for Jews of all backgrounds and traditions. Rabbi Yashiv was subsequently approached about this matter and has expressly requested that the following statement be publicized in his name. Asur latet hechsher lematzot rakot likilot Ashkenaz kizu pirtsa bihadut Ashkenaz ein alze masoret v'af pam lo nagu leavsher achilat matzah rakot. Translation: it is forbidden to give a hechsher to soft matzahs for Ashkenazi communities because this is a breach of tradition. There is no tradition amongst Ashkenazi Jewry to consume soft matzahs, and they have never allowed the eating of soft matzahs. The above statement, Rebel Yashiv, relates to the issues of breaking a long-standing tradition in the community, which is quite a part of the malachic problems associated with the production of such matzahs. Wishing the community kosher and joyous Pesach. Rabbinical Council of Victoria. What?
How are they making money on this?
Okay.
There's no way.
I don't know. Can you give me water? Thanks. Okay, yes, the Rabbinical Council of Victoria, quoting Rabbi Yashiv, says... Now, by the way, methodologically, know what I said. Wait, whoa. What did I say? In order to make this severe, usher statement, you need two assumptions, which they take both, which Rabbi Yashiv made both, which is...
Hardline Eidah. And it was actual...
And it is an actual minog. Right? Those are the two assumptions you need. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All the way to the other extreme... Right? The people who say, no and no, it is obviously mutter, or what are you talking about? Arav Shechter, who's like the Baal HaMemra, to the point where Rav Aviner, who's very Israeli, but very randomly quotes YU people, decided to quote Rav Shechter here. Because he's like, I heard Rav Shechter says it's mutter. He does.
Amen.
First, let's look at Rav Shechter. And if you don't believe me, right, I did a favor for you. I didn't retype it. This is Rav Shechter in his handwriting, okay? You can look at it, okay? He says...
I'm not like unreadable.
What?
That's very readable.
What are you talking about?
That's really readable.
Not unreadable. Oh, didn't you say it was bad?
What?
Here.
No, he said you can see it.
So he says... So the first half of it, I'll just say outside, which is that the Sfardi minug is to make mizonos on hard matzah unless they're gavei asud on it, because they think it's pasah b'kissin and not bread. Rav Shechter says that the Ashkenazi minug is to make it as... what?
Isn't pasah b'kissin it has like stuff in it?
No, there's three definitions, one of which is hard, like a cracker.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Bomb makes
Okay, that's the first half of this. Okay, and he says, no, Ashkenazim can make hamotzi. Fine. Definitely if they're kobei asuda. Fine. Okay? Good.
Okay, so it's a suffix if you're even yotzi or...
No. If you're kobei asuda, it'd be fine.
You can.
Right, you can make pasah b'kissin on two cakes. You can make alecha mishn on two cakes.
No,
those are kobei asuda, which is pasah b'kissin.
Though, if you can't make hamotzi on it...
No, you can. It's just, if you're kobei asuda, you make hamotzi.
Even smarter.
It's like crackers. If you have 100 crackers, you make, you wash and make hamotzi. Same svara.
I see.
Okay, fine? Good. That's the first half. Not right. That's not for us now. Look in the middle of the letter. Okay, look in the middle of the letter. He writes... Harbei svaradim ochlem matzot shehem kein svog, the lo kanal. Many svaradim have, you know, spongy, like soft matzah, not, you know, our crackers. Val pi pshuto hayanira she'af la'ashkenazi mutar lechol matzot, elu shel svaradim. Right? And Ashkenazim can eat these too. The mashakaz of Rama, lechol pesach, she'nagol asozim rekikin, al pshuto lo ritzon alomar ke ka'ochim. Right, etc. Right, it says it doesn't mean that it's crackers. It just means it's pachos mi tefach and pachos mi etzba. It's like, what are you talking about?
He's saying it's not. It's not that it can't be soft. It's not. It can't be thick.
Yeah. Right. He said, what are you talking about? There is no minog. Right. And then he goes down. Shevur lekai mitzvahs matzah mitzvah the matzah asu kisvog. And he says it's explicit that you can, right, that you can do it like a soft matzah. This isn't a shinui minog. It's not a shinui minog. It's like changing your parochet from red to blue, right? Now, what? Now, Rav Shechter, like I said, you have to be very careful methodologically. Rav Shechter is consistent. He accepts what?
Minag
Ashkenaz Svard. He just doesn't accept that this was ever a minag.
Right?
Right? And that's what I said. You need two assumptions to be machmir, right? One is recognize hard lines between Ashkenaz and Sfarad, and two, think that this is a minhag rather than just like, we just didn't do it, right? And Rav Shechter says, I'm willing to accept Ashkenaz and Sfarad, right? This is Kedarko Bakodesh, even though he doesn't always, right? But in this one, he's saying, look, I'm willing to accept Ashkenaz and Sfarad, but what are you talking about? What minhag is this? This is like soft matzah, is like a blue parochet, right? That's what he says.
Meaning the shades on your window?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't
it's like you had a red one for the last 50 years and you changed it to blue. Yeah. Oy, Gaval, change the minhag. He's like, what are you people talking about? He's like, so we had hard matzah for a while, so we'll have soft matzah. What do you want from my life?
Wait,
right?
Parochet on the Aron Kodesh?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yes, in the Aron.
Whatever.
His point is, he just gave an example. He's like, it's not a minhag, right? The fact that you did it doesn't make... I told you, the classic Rav Shechter story about minhag, right, was... That that Rav Shechter has a lot of guests. I've told you this before. Has a lot of guests who come to his house, right? And they bring wine. So what does he do? Rav Shechter's minhag, right? Quote unquote, is that Friday night he uses red wine and Shabbos day he uses white wine. Why? Because Im Kvari is a million bottles of wine. You might as well be machmer like the Rambam at night, and use Yayin Adam. And during the day he has leftovers, so he uses white, right? One of his sons got married, and he went to him, and he said, whatever he says to him, Abba, Tati, I don't know what Rav Shechter goes by, right? I'm following your minhag. I have red wine at Friday night and white wine during the day. And he said to him, what are you talking about? That's not a minhag, right? I didn't have a minhag like that. I just have a lot of wine, so I use red at night and I use wine during the day. That's not a minhag. Not everything I do is a chalois shei minhag, right? Like, right? It's just not. Okay. Rav Aviner, go back to 18. Ha'em mutar l'ashkenazim lechol matzot rakot. So Rav Aviner says, Amnam yesh ozrim. He said, there are people who say atzer. Even though, umodim shebavari yochlim aval chadlu, even though Rosh Hashanah admits, right, that we used to eat it, He said, "Shein masar latir."
He says mutter. Doesn't Rav Shlomo
Zalman? No, he says usher. No, he says meikra din.
Meikra din mutter.
Yes, and therefore, and then he says, "Vaminag ben Ashkenaz lasod the dakol of sharve ein lashkenaz the hakel."
Right.
Right, meaning.
But meikra din, it's mutter. He says.
Okay, this is an important point, Yaakov. Right? You need to understand the difference between a lamdan, the way a lamdan and a postake reads what Rav Shlomo Zalman just said. A lamdan reads it and says, he says it's mutter maker adin.
Not 1%.
A postake reads it and says, but he said don't do it. Right? Right now I want to talk to postake. I want to talk methodology of psak. And he says, even though it's mutter maker adin, he recognizes, right? He thinks A, Ashkenaz Svard, and B, thinks this is a minog, and therefore, even though he admits it's against Ikra Din, it's binding me to minog. Right?
So maybe I'm not opposed
But Rav Aviner says, no. He says, I'm gamin masoret la'asor. Right? Like, there's no misora in any direction, like Rosh Hechter, right? This is not a. Right? And he quotes the Ramah, right? He quotes the whatever. And then he says, Vagon Rav Asher Weiss hit their maker adin, Rak Shechosh again became a. Rachus, etc. Aval Eidur Mizrach came to Kiyam. He said, look, the problem is, admittedly, Ashkenazim haven't made it, so they don't know how to make it.
I'm sure
good, so get a Timani to make it and teach you how to make it. He said, what's the problem? I don't understand. Right? He's like, I don't understand the Shaila. Right? Get it out there. Right? And he says, V'chein Hagon Rav Tzvi Shechter Matur. He said, and Rav Shechter said it was Matur anyways. So, then I love him, because he's very curt. B'sikum Mutar. Right? Summary. It's mutter, right? Now, who's another way... Rav Aviner is a very prominent Chardal posek in Israel.
He wrote a pair somewhere before.
He's written a lot. He's written a lot.
We have some.
Yeah, we have.
Okay. Now, again, I said you could come to the same conclusion by denying hard lines between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. I assume... Now, you do see a little bit of the Rav Aviner, right? Which is, okay, we don't have a minog, but... So we'll just learn from the Tamanim, right? Meaning there is a bit of a recognition of that, but I think the reason they don't, the poskim don't come hard line on there isn't a difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim is because here it's totally unnecessary. Like Rav Shechter and Rav Aviner just convinced this was never a minhag. So like, I don't have to get into those diyunim, but you do see that Rav Aviner starts to go in that direction of breaking down both, right? Ein masoret la'asor, I and Ashkenazim don't have a custom of how to make it, so ask a Tamani. Right? Which is where he acknowledges, what does that mean? Ashkenazim having minhag to be ignorant of how to make matzah? I understand. Right? So ask a Sephardi. Like, what are you talking about? Right? Okay. Good. That's the two extremes. The middle is Rav Asher Weiss. Right? Now, Rav Asher Weiss, I printed out several copies of his tshuva, so if you want to look at it inside and read it, he has two tshuvot on the topic. If people want it, but I'm gonna skim through it, but you can take it afterwards. I have the tshuva at home. It's not like the actual. Okay.
Copy.
Yeah. Here.
It's 2 pages.
It's 2 pages. Yeah. I'm not gonna read it all now, but I figured you might want to read it. So, okay. So look, let me summarize it first. Okay. First, what he does, and I don't have to reiterate this, is he goes through many of the proofs that we saw, and he says it is clear that in the past there was soft matzah, right? Like he's totally into that. Right, he totally buys that. And he quotes a bunch of the different proofs. He quotes the Isaron proof. He quotes the thickness proof. Okay, so now go on to the top of, if you have it, you want to look at it. So look on Kuf Mem Aleph here on page. He says at the end, he says, V'nir l'chora, d'ma sh'nagub is v'nir l'asot matzot d'dako, mor enu mechrei chomra mechshash chimot, tzom yishom ha'yitzor amoni, sh'mat shem harbe, z'man l'fnei Pesach, matzot rakot, l'achar z'man, mu'at, I think I might have just stopped in the middle, I don't know. O'malar o'vesh, mit yabshur, mit gashur, k'mo lechem, yesh alochon, r'achar z'man mu'at. And he said, look, I think, right, he makes 2 points. First, they used to have soft matzah for the proofs that we raised. Two, the reason that hard matzah came into effect is not because of a chumrah, it's because of mass production. Right? Meaning, he totally buys this whole history.
The urbanizing?
Yeah, he buys that whole thing. Meaning, he thinks that this isn't, it's mutter mekar din, and he even thinks that this didn't start as a minog. Right? So at that point, you would say,
mutter.
But then he says on the top of Kof Memal, he says, ach, mikol makom chonchecha ni bazeh. I'm hesitant. Efshar, Dana Nubikin, Kol Kach, Latzot, Matzot, Avot, Verachot, Lochshash, Chimot, Kol Shuv, Efshar, Shum, Chumra, Zunog, Lasser, Kukin, Dakim, Akashin. He's a bit of a. This is where he hedges. He says, right, it's Rav Aviner isn't fair to him. Rav Aviner says that, what does he say? We don't know how to make it. To which Rav Aviner says, get a Temani. Right? That's not what he said. He said, it could be that Ashkenazim weren't good at making it, and therefore, the reason they moved to hard matzah was a minhag. Not because they just didn't, but because they were concerned about chimutz, right? Meaning, the chshash iser is one of the things that generates real minhagim. Uh-huh. Right? It's a very subtle point, right? He says, it could be, he's not convinced, but he said it could be that because Ashkenazim stopped making it because they weren't sure how to do it, they did accept upon themselves an actual minhag out of the concern for Isser. Right? You understand the move he's making?
Yeah.
Right? It's a very subtle one. He's not saying we don't know how to do it. He's saying our forefathers didn't know how to do it, and therefore maybe this wasn't the parochet one. Maybe they actually accepted it as a minhag not to. Okay? So he says, V'im Cain, and he says, Yesh li manam izal kol panam lechatchila, and therefore I would say, don't do lechatchila. And then he says, Umikom makom, ityarei ani mine chidushim, and I'm afraid to be mechadesh, which he usually isn't, but sometimes he is. Sometimes his chassidish side sort of comes out, right? V'kol ki agavna v'bechlal al tito shtori mecha. And this is the type of thing where we say, you know, follow minag in the sort of amorphous sense. U'pesach, and then he adds another one. This is very posiki, right? It's Pesach, and in Pesach we already have chumras. Right? Roy Lincoln, because the here is v'chumra.
But this is a chumra on a suffix minhag.
And then he says, wait one second, and then he says, and he says, and it could be that this is what the Chassam Sofer meant. In the next line, v'shuvah isi, v'shuvah chassam sofer, because of the rabba hamachshelah, v'matzas avos, she'enim nefos yovan machmas yovyan, u'berov ariyashin asru asam becharamos. That the chassam sofer has a line where he says, because thick matzah is hard to make, not chametz, in many cities they have a cherem against it. Ooh, right?
Take those charamos seriously.
If you're Rav Asher Weiss and you're a Hasidish posek,
what about the cherem of Chassam Sofer is Talmidim not to give any drushes in the
not every
colloquial language.
Again.
No English drushes
again.
Anymore.
But I want you to think for a moment. Guys, I want you just to think methodologically. Right? Right? There are two ways of taking it, right? Like I said, there's the this isn't a minhag, or even if it was, we don't really recognize a hard line between Ashkenaz and Sfarad, and therefore we can borrow Temani minhagim, right? Which is, Rav Shechter here just goes the direction, it's not a minhag, and Rav Aviner says, mostly it's not a minhag, and a little bit of just learn from Ashkenazim, because he's unfair to Rav Asher Weiss, right? The other extreme is, no, this is really a minhag, and we have a hard line to Ashkenaz Sfarad, which is Rabbi Yashiv, right? Rav Shlomo Zalman is slightly softer, to be fair, than Rabbi Yashiv. Rabbi Yashiv is pretty strong on that line. Then there's Rav Asher Weiss, which is
Osir, he says.
Yeah.
The only one that says Osir.
Like, yeah, yeah. Osir. Like mom, like that's again, those are madrigos of how much you take that. Then there's the
he probably doesn't mean like Osir maker didn't. He probably is
I
like
don't
a, talking
know.
About post kind of thing.
I mean like, Osir means don't you can't do it. What does he mean? Right? Don't do it.
Right.
Right? Yeah. He didn't whatever.
He wouldn't say like
Rav Asher sort of hedges.
He wouldn't tell
right? Rav Asher says, I think Meyukar did it's mutter, but again, it's a very subtle point. He's not convinced of it. He says, maybe the practical led to a gzeira, which might be what the Chassam Sofer is talking about, that it was a cherem and Ashkenaz. And therefore, I mean, what's he really saying? I'm convinced of the Ashkenazi-Svardi divide. I'm just not sure whether this is a we didn't do it or a minhag. And since it's Pesach, right? And since I'm a general, I care about minhagim, in the amorphous sense, I will be no te lechumra. Right? It's a very... Look, when I say he's hedging, right, he literally introduces them. I'm like, you know, I'm not sure. Okay? But that breaks down because unlike in the next tshuva, immediately after that, he was asked, okay, but what if someone has colitis? Mm-hmm. Right?
What's
and it's... Right? A stomach, a bad stomach disease. Right? It's a bad stomach disease, okay? It's hard for digestion. He has digestion problems. Serious digestion problems. So then he said, the doctors told him that he can eat Sephardi matzah, but he can't have Ashkenazi matzah.
This is not from Zalman.
Right, so remember, Shlomo Zalman was more convinced of the real minhag. So what did he say? So I'd rather you mush up your matzah than have this.
How is that? If he was
right? Whatever. Whoa. Okay, whatever. So what does he say?
Crazy.
Right? So he says, make sense of what he said. He said, look, maker adin, it's mutter. And therefore,
eat it.
Yeah, it's fine. Right? Meaning, right? It's only, right? Really, right? I mean, he goes back and is a karadin. So he says, if someone's sick, so then it's fine. Right? Wait. No, I'm sorry. Did I get that wrong? One second. Wait. Make it aside, and I'm not jumping here. He says.
Didn't you tell me that?
He says, fine. That's why. It's on the next page. Right? So he says, they go to the Chumrah, and he says that the Sfaradim do it, and it's fine. He goes to the whole explanation. He doubles down on that Chassam Sofer thing. He argues that maybe the Chassam Sofer really didn't mean it in the way he interpreted the other one. So the last paragraph, he says, Mishum kolzen near the Mikra din Yachol lechol matzah shenagel b'im esfardim. Ach mekevin shezeh minugod leminagach kaz roi shiasa ataras nedarim. He says, this is very hedging. He says, you can do it, but be matzah neder. Right, what's that doing? But think about it methodologically, it's saying,
trying to go to the maybe minhag then.
Right, meaning he's saying, it might be a minhag. So what do you do with a maybe minhag? You're matzah neder, because then you approve the minhag.
So I haven't heard
right?
That. So anyone.
And then he says, "Whoa!" And then he says, "V'af de pashut lo mahani hataras nedarim lahatir minhag vatik and shall eidud be Israel." He really does believe in Ashkenaz Sfarad. He said, "Don't think I'm giving you a heter to use hataras nedarim on your Ashkenaziut. I'm not, or your Ashkenazius, right?" He said, "L'rafcha l'milsa." So he came in the yendanira ikar de yesh lahatir ablo lo hatara. He said, I'm not sure it's Aser to begin with. Right? The only reason I would be Aser is because a suffix that there is a minhag and a cherem. Under such a circumstance, I'm willing to say, be mater neder. Why? Because I'm not sure it's a minhag. And it might solve the Eidah problem. But I'm not going to just let you solve other Eidah problems because I really do think there's such a thing as Ashkenaz Sfarad. Right?
Why don't we just all be matzah neder?
That's the thing, is he doesn't believe you can do that. Again, no, that's what I'm saying, methodologically. He does believe in Ashkenaz Sfarad, and that's why he's saying, don't think. But then his last one, he says, Adif shalol l'shan az aminag. And he says, if possible, again, he hedges one more time, and he says, if possible, and you can get away with a little bit of soft, hard matzah, do it. But if push comes to shove, and you really can have hard matzah, then have soft matzah, but be matzah neder.
Right.
So again, just to summarize, because Marib's in 2.5 minutes, right? What I think you see here, interestingly, is three models and three in which the trends spill over into other psak. Right? You have those who have a trend of recognizing hard lines between Ashkenaz Sfarad, and B, calling everything we do and don't do a minhag. Right? Then you have Poskim who either blur the lines between Ashkenaz and Sfarad and say that Eidah is not such an absolute category, which is Rav Aviner sort of toys with here, or saying even if you do recognize it, not every thing you do, every custom, is a chaloy shem minag, which is really Rishachter. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you have Poskim who say, look, I hear this, I hear that, and this, again, you may not like it because Lamdanim don't like this type of messy things, who say, look, I'll recognize the truth Mekra Adin, and when push comes to shove, I'll allow you to rely on it, but I do really believe in minhag, and I do, thanks for that, right, I am uncomfortable being mechadesh, right, poskim are conservative by their nature, right, small c conservative, And that's really what Rav Asher is doing. He's saying, I think it's really mutter, but there might be a minhag. I'm not convinced there is, and therefore I would tell you be machmir. But if you're sick, so that, you know, but you see what he's doing,
yeah.
Right? Now, methodologically, you'll find that a lot, right? Because as much as you like the ones on the outside, realistically, a lot of poskim often fall in the middle, right? Which is, I really think this, but psak, like I said, is small c conservative, right? And if you want to understand how psak works, right, you should always be looking for these types of models, especially around minhagim, right? Again, those who say, minhag, everything we do or don't do is a minhag, I recognize this strongly, a dote, etc., etc. Then you have poskim who say, I'm not convinced of a dote, and I'm not convinced everything we do or don't do is a minhag. And then you have poskim or somewhere in between who therefore fudge it a little bit, right? They hedge because psak is messy. Right? And that shouldn't surprise you, even if it annoys you. As a lamdan, it shouldn't surprise you because psak is practical. And often when we're practical, we try to cover all our bases, if possible. Right?
Yep.
So I think this sugya happens to be a nice sugya in terms of seeing the different models that poskim have about shilas like this. Right? You may agree or disagree with any given posing in every given sugya, but it, again, gives you models to approach other halachic cases. Okay? Let's go to Mark.